Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry, and I am a nicotine addict, and I'm from Windsor, Ontario, Canada. Can you all hear me okay? Yep, okay, very good. I'm really happy to be here tonight. Thanks to my higher power and you people and Nicotine Anonymous. 1 month, 17 days, and 2 hours. And I wouldn't have that if it wasn't for you people, and I know that because, as Kenny said, I was here before, and I really got a bit cocky, and I stopped doing the things I was supposed to do, and I went back out, and you know what? It was worse, and now I'm back again with a whole different understanding of this addiction. I believe it's the same as any other talk, I guess, to say what it was like, what happened, and how life is like now without nicotine. I think, like a lot of addicts, I didn't feel a part of. I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. My early beginnings were not that good. I was born into a home where there was a lot of serious child abuse. Really serious child abuse. Two of my sisters died as a result of the child abuse in that house. I ended up in an orphanage, ended up adopted, and the home that I was adopted into, I was adopted when I was 5, the home that I was adopted into, they smoked. Now, my mother was a really interesting smoker, and I don't know how this operates because I'm an addict, and I can't understand one. I can't understand one once in a while. And so, you know, like every now and then she and Dad would have a glass of wine and they would then have their cigarettes. Now, Dad smoked every day, all the time. Mother only smoked when she had a glass of wine, which now at 60 years old and also being in AA, I kind of cuckold because I could never have a glass of wine and nor could I have a cigarette. Actually, they went together quite well back in the day. And I remember, you know, I was bullied in school a lot and I did not have a lot of friends at all. I was very alone. I wouldn't say lonely because I did learn how to entertain myself quite well. But I was still alone. When I got into grade 9, I was sitting by the door, I remember, and there was this chick in the next row, and she had on a yellow Empire waist dress and long blonde curly hair and this infectious laugh. And her name was Doris. And Doris, I didn't know that day when I first met Doris that Doris was to become my friend for the next 51 years, my best friend, actually. Anyway, Doris passed me a note, and the note said, "Do you want a cigarette?" And I wrote back on the note and saying, "I don't smoke." She writes back and said, "I didn't ask you if you F something smoke. I asked you if you wanted a cigarette." And I wanted a friend. That's what I wanted, was a friend. So I said yes. We met out in the hall. We made the excuse we got to go to the ladies' room. We met out in the hall. And we went into the boys' room. I always think of that when I hear that song, Smoking in the Boys' Room. But we went into the boys' room and into their stall and lit up a cigarette. And I choked and I gagged. And you know what, though? Truthfully, choking, gagging, and I fell in love with it at the same time. I felt like I was sharing something with someone, and I had never shared anything with a friend before. And it was a whole new experience. I really, really liked it. And she smoked a lot, only 15, 16 years old, right? She smoked a lot. And then I went home and I told my father, well, Dad, you know, I started smoking, and instead of telling me, oh, that's not good for you, it's bad for you, he went out and bought me a pack of cigarettes. And they were Peter Jackson. That was it, Peter Jackson. And I remember on the inside of that package of cigarettes, it said, "Perfection consists in doing ordinary things extraordinarily well." I still remember that to this day. And so I started smoking. And at first, you know, I really wouldn't smoke a lot, except for when Doris and I walked to high school together, and when we skipped class together and at lunch, and then when we skipped class in the afternoon, and then on the way home, you know, like it was that kind of thing. And A&W used to have a drive-in then, and we used to go to the A&W drive-in, and we'd smoke and laugh and carry on, and, you know, it all seemed to be a lot of fun, right? And cigarettes didn't cost a lot of money then either. What I had no idea about, though, was how deadly of an addiction it would prove to be, how powerful this addiction is, and that eventually when I found my way into Alcoholics Anonymous, this addiction to nicotine is the one that would not be kicked out. You know, when I eventually got older, life happened. You know, Doris and I grew up. We finished high school. Well, actually, we quit high school. And then, you know, each of us got married. And she had two kids. I had one. And we had the kids, each other, and our cigarettes. And, you know, we'd walk down the street, when I think about it now, we'd walk down the street with these baby buggies, right? And we'd both be having cigarettes hanging out of our mouth. And one who always reminded me of me was the one, that TV show, Something About My Children, where Al and the wife, I forget her name, but she's making a salad and she's got the cigarette hanging out of her mouth. And that was about me. Me and Doris, pretty much, you know. That's a, married with children, that was it, married with children. And she reminded me of me, because you know what, In the end, I did nothing without a cigarette. I got up, I had a cigarette. I would lay and get, okay, here's a good one. You have a nice hot bubble bath, okay? So I get myself a nice hot bubble bath ready because I think I'm going to do something healthy and I'm going to do something good for myself, right? Get that, healthy and good for myself. So I get a nice hot bubble bath going. I light the candles. I get in the bathtub. Isn't this nice? And what a wonderful example of self-care. And then I light a cigarette. So I lay in the bathtub, right? Telling myself I'm doing something nice for myself, while at the same time I'm smoking one cigarette after another and I'm poisoning myself, right? Fast forward a few years, and a few years goes by, and then I start to cough. And then I tell myself, well, you know, it's natural to have a smoker's cough, right? That goes along with the territory, so it's not really any big deal at all, and I kept smoking. And then the cough got worse and worse and worse. And then every once in a while, I'd have trouble catching my breath. And then I would get bronchitis like two or three times a year. And one time the doctor said to me, you know, you need to quit smoking. And I said to him, well, you need to quit nagging, right? And that was really good. And he said, well, you know, maybe we'll do some lung x-rays. And you know what? I have to admit that I am stubborn and I am defiant. And I remember saying to him, well, if you think you're going to scare me into quitting smoking, you've got another thing coming. Because this is what I say to my doctor. Because I know where I'm going when I die. Do you know where you're going? So I'm not worried about whether I die or not, right? You know, but the reality was, the truth was, I couldn't picture myself without a cigarette. And the other truth was, I felt sorry for myself. I thought, you know what, I spent a lot of time drinking and a lot of time drugging, right? And I stagger into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I gave up alcohol, and I gave up drugs. Yay me! And now, you tell me I have to give up smoking? The one and only thing I have left? Are you kidding me? I didn't realize the power of this addiction. I didn't realize how dangerous it was. And I didn't realize what I'd do to other people. My smoking continued, and then I got diagnosed with emphysema. Now the doctor says, you know what? What's left, Jerry? Bronchitis, you've had pneumonia, emphysema, so we're probably looking at lung cancer. And I said, well, that's okay. So in the end, just make sure you shoot me full of morphine so I don't hear myself drowning on my own fluid. And he kind of shook his head. I would say and do anything other than quitting. But then I thought to myself, well, you know what, though, with this emphysema might not be very good, and I hear it's like breathing through a straw, so that might not be a good idea, so maybe I should quit. So then I decided to try to quit. Of course, did I do by coming to Nicotine Anonymous? Oh, no. I decided I was going to quit by myself. So I decided I was going to switch the brand of cigarette I smoke, and I was going to go from, by that time I was smoking Benson and Hedges, and I was going to go to Du Maurier, which I can't stand, right? So I thought, I'm going to smoke those, because I don't like those, so I'll smoke less. That did not work. And then I thought, well, okay, so you know what? I know what I'll do. I will keep track of how many cigarettes I have in a day, and I will try harm reduction. That's it. I'll smoke less. I won't have to quit, right? And surely I'm stronger than a cigarette, surely to God, right? So I started to keep track of how many cigarettes I smoked. Well, when I kept track of them, of course, it amounted to like about a pack and a half a day. And then I thought, okay, fine. So now you know what I'll do. I'll go down to a pack. And I'll start eliminating certain cigarettes. Well, you know what I did? This is insane. Okay, so I eliminate the cigarette that I have when I first get up in the morning, which probably was not the best one to start with. But then later on in the morning, I have like twice as many to make up for the one that I didn't have earlier, right? So keeping track didn't work. Not taking them with me to work didn't work, because I'd leave work and then I'd borrow money from a coworker and leave work and go get a pack, you know. And speaking of money, I have stolen money from my daughter's piggy bank. My husband used to throw all of his toonies and loonies into a drawer, and when he was at work, I stole them if I was running short to make sure that I'd have enough. Because, you know, I always had to have enough cigarettes, eh? Everywhere, in the car, in the freezer, in the bathroom, in the bedroom, because God knows what happens if they stop making them tomorrow. Won't I be in trouble, right? I didn't care who I stole from. We had a no-smoking policy at work. I made sure I knew when the boss was looking, when they weren't, and I went out and smoked anyway. No one was going to tell me. When all the non-smokers chirp about their rights as non-smokers not to inhale secondhand smoke, I would get really angry at them. I have written a letter to the editor about the rights of all people, not just those who don't smoke, and oh my God, and how judgmental they are, and oh, I went on and on over that one, because I got angry because I didn't want anyone telling me what I could not do, or what I could do, or don't judge me. And then I felt judged too, because as more and more places went no smoking, now I'm outside smoking behind a garage, or smoking at a picnic table near the garbage container where all the bees are flying around, and you begin to feel like a second-class citizen, right? So anyway, then I decided to quit all by myself, and I don't need anybody or anything, but I'm angry as well, because I have to quit, because I didn't want to quit, and that did not work. And then I found Nicotine Anonymous, and they had a face-to-face meeting here in Windsor, Ontario, and there were only like about 6 or 7 people that went. But I started going there. That proved to me more successful. I stopped smoking for over a year going to that meeting. But you know what? The truth was, I hadn't fully surrendered. to this addiction. I hadn't fully admitted how powerful it was and how powerless I was, that I needed other people, that I needed these steps, that I needed to treat this addiction just like I had treated my disease of alcoholism and drug addiction, that I had to recognize really that any and all form of addiction could kill me, including this one. Unfortunately, the little face-to-face Nicotine Anonymous meeting here in Windsor folded, and I used that as the excuse. Oh, I don't have a meeting to go to now. What is the point of trying to stay smoke-free or nicotine-free? It doesn't really matter. I don't have anybody to talk to anymore. And then the sponsor, Nicotine Anonymous, died from a smoking-related illness, wouldn't you know? And then I came up with the idea, well, you know what, at that. They had been smoke-free for many years, and they still died of a nicotine-related illness. What is the point in stopping? So I started again, right? And that continued for quite a while. And the bronchitis got worse, the emphysema was getting worse, and then I found Nicotine Anonymous online, and then I found Vonar. And then, with the help of Nicotine Anonymous and Vonar, and I got a sponsor in Vonar, but you know what? The sponsor I had, he's been around a long time, but the sponsor I had was really honest with me. And the truth is, I was not ready to hear that honesty at the time. And he questioned my thinking, and I didn't like the fact that he questioned my thinking. I did not like the word powerless. I didn't want to think that with 38 years of sobriety, having dealt with another addiction to alcohol and drugs, and being an addiction counselor myself, that I could possibly be powerless over this little white thing called a cigarette. No, I don't think so. So I kind of fought it. I really didn't work it to the best of my ability. I didn't listen to him. I debated everything with him, and then I thought I had my stuff all together, so, oh, why not become an admin? Oh, there's a really good idea. While I'm not believing how powerless I am, let's become an admin and let's chair a few meetings. That ought to be really good. Okay, I can do that. And I did it. And I think I did it well. And there's another tape of another talk I gave that's up on the Vonar site too, eh? But guess what happened, though? My ego got inflated, and I thought, oh, look at me chairing these meetings. Aren't I good? Oh, I'm really good at this. You know, I was good at it, but yeah. But, oh, I'm really good at this. I must be doing a lot better. And, oh, look at that poor one. They relapsed. Well, I haven't relapsed. I'm doing really good, blah, blah. And I got really, really cocky. And then I stopped reading the literature because, after all, I have it all together, don't you know? And stop reading literature. The only meetings I went to on Vonar, you ready for this, were basically the ones that I chaired, right? Oh, that's really good, Jerry. That's really humble of you. And you know what? As fate would have it, I relapsed. And guess what? I stopped coming to Vonar, of course. I stopped attending the meetings. I stopped reading all the literature. I felt really embarrassed. I felt like a loser that I couldn't get it right. I couldn't get it perfectly, you know. And then, you know, the smoking got worse. If it was possible, it got worse. I actually smoked way more than I had before. Believe it or not, now I'm up to 2 packs a day. I don't care whether anybody likes my smoking or not. My ex-husband, who was my husband at the time, one time said to me, I can't believe you're smoking again. The smoke really bothers me. And I actually said to him, and we'd been married for many years, and I said to him, you know what, if you don't like my smoking, don't let the door hit you in the ass on your way out, all right? Bottom line, I'm going to do what I want. My life, my breath, my house. You don't like it, you can leave. Well, that was really nice, Jerry, right? Time passes. Again, the bronchitis, the emphysema, the coughing, the choking, the gagging. I began to cough so hard that I would vomit. I would cough up blood, and yet I'd still smoke. I took them everywhere with me. I even had them beside my bed. I did not make a move without having cigarettes. I then decide I'm going to quit again, but now I'm going to vape. Because by this time now, a lot of people I know are vaping. And I'm going to vape because, after all I'm doing is vaping. I can vape nicotine, so my body will still get the nicotine it wants. And I can avoid the cigarettes. And my reasoning for that was, and this is terrible, but this is actually what happened. My grandson, Jack, my youngest grandson, has asthma. I had a trailer. I had a 31-foot prowler. And I would bring him out there on the weekends, and it was raining, and I didn't want to go outside in the rain or out in the attic room to have a cigarette. So I smoked in this 31-foot prowler with my grandson, who the next day ended up in the hospital because he was having such a bad asthma attack, thanks to me smoking in a small trailer, a little boy that couldn't escape and had asthma. That's really nice, Gary, right? So that's when I started vaping. I thought I'm going to vape, and I started off at 18 milligrams of nicotine, and I went down to 3. But, you know, really there's danger in that, at least for the, and I speak for myself. If anyone else is vaping, more power to you. For myself, there was danger in that, and I'll tell you why. I was still giving myself nicotine. I was still putting nicotine in my body. I just found a different way to do it, that's all. And I kept telling myself it was better for me because it contained less toxins, less poison, blah, 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 blah. But it was better than smoking. But how did I ever expect to get over an addiction to nicotine, which is the real issue, while I was still putting nicotine into my body? I don't know how I thought that was ever going to happen. But where it proved to me to be not the answer either was on October 27, 2018, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I found out that my grandson, my oldest grandson, has a potentially fatal disease. He will have it for the rest of his life. He was only 21 when he got diagnosed. It's Addison's disease, in case anyone's familiar with that. It is a lifelong, life-threatening disease, and it's a terrible, terrible disease. That was confirmed at 3 o'clock that afternoon. I went to work that afternoon, 4 to 12, and at 6:50 p.m., I had just been doing a counseling session, and I got a phone call from my daughter. And my granddaughter, my daughter was hysterical, and I thought maybe my grandson had passed away. As it turns out, my granddaughter revealed that my husband of 30 years had been sexually assaulting her for the last 8 years of our marriage, and I had no idea. I left work. I drove to my daughter's house. And when I got there, instantaneously when I got there, I went to take my vape, and the battery died. And without even a moment's hesitation, I said to my daughter, give me a cigarette. And she said, oh, well, you've quit smoking. I said, I don't give a damn. Give me the cigarette. I want a cigarette. So she gave me a cigarette, and I sat there smoking a cigarette and holding my granddaughter's hand while she gave her report to the police over what's been going on for the last 8 years. Anyway, I smoked my way through that. You know, I'm not proud of it, but that's just the way it was, right? He was arrested on that Friday night, taken out of the house that Friday night. I wasn't here. I didn't see that. And then he was in jail over the weekend. He was charged with 3 accounts of sexual assault. And I smoked a ton, let me tell you. I really did. I did not drink. I did not return to using dope or marijuana or any downers or anything like that, but I certainly smoked up a storm, let me tell you. I bought a whole carton of cigarettes, and I just didn't care, right, at that point. And then I was sitting there, well, a little over 3 months ago now, and I was sitting there and I was telling myself, you know, Gary, you're going to kill yourself, eh? Isn't this nice? All this bad stuff happens and you run right back to a cigarette because that's your comfort, right? You thought. And here you are. Now I was coughing even worse than before. And I thought, well, this is really good. You know, I'll get you. I'll kill me. So one day I got up a little over 3 months ago and I went in the bathroom. I was going to go to work and I started to cough and all of a sudden there was blood everywhere. It looked like a crime scene. I was choking, coughing, choking, swallowing blood, spitting up blood. There was a lot of blood splatter, and it scared the heck out of me. My throat was so sore I could barely swallow. And I think it dawned on me then. I thought, you know what, Jerry, you're going to kill yourself with these cigarettes. It doesn't matter all the bad stuff that's happened in the last year. Every cigarette you've had hasn't taken that away. And all cigarettes you could have is not going to change anything anyway, but what it is going to do is it's really going to kill you. And I think it was that moment when I was standing there looking in the bathroom mirror that had blood all over it and the bathroom sink with blood all in it, realizing, you know what? Like, this is serious here. You're dying. You're going to kill yourself. What you've done here is you have bought a gun and the bullet is the cigarette. And you've been playing Russian roulette with this gun and loaded cigarette for years. And you know what? It might come out of that gun. And that might be the cigarette that causes the lung cancer if it isn't too late already. That's what I thought. So I went to my doctor and I said, you know what, I'm going to stop smoking. Well, how are you going to do that? Do you want some medication? No, I don't. I'm going back to what I know works, Nicotine Anonymous. And he sent me for chest x-rays. And, you know, talk about a miracle. The x-rays came back, and my lungs are in really good condition. Can you believe that? With bronchitis and emphysema, you've got to be kidding me, right? My throat, though, blood vessels in my throat are damaged and will probably remain damaged for the rest of my life. So when I look at it, you know, I came back to Nicotine Anonymous in here. Thank God you were still here. Thank God these meetings were still here. I got myself a sponsor, and actually I still have her. I thought I didn't for a while, but I still do. And she is asking me questions. I got the workbook. This time I'm working through the steps in the workbook. This time I'm reading the literature. And this time I fully understand how dangerous and powerful this addiction really is. This addiction wants me dead. This addiction is a serial killer. It's trying to kill me. It's trying to kill you. And it has already killed some people that we may have known. It certainly has killed a few I've known. My best friend Doris, she died 3 years ago. And she never gave up smoking. Never. And her death was not smoking related. It was due to diabetes that she didn't take care of. But she had never quit smoking. She had a horrible cough. She could barely talk. Her throat was terrible. She never found Nicotine Anonymous. I was blessed because I found Nicotine Anonymous. I found Vonar. I found you people. I am now fully aware of how deadly this addiction is, that I am powerless over this addiction, that I cannot have one cigarette because one will always lead to one or two packs. I cannot vape either, because vaping for me was like methadone for nicotine users, right? And you know what? All vaping did was reduce the amount of toxins I was injecting into my body, But isn't that how powerful this disease is, when you think about it? That I would talk myself into vaping, but I'm still taking nicotine. So the nicotine itself is such a powerful addiction that I could not imagine not having nicotine in my body. Really? So the substance of nicotine is far more powerful than I. And it's really interesting, and some of you may be able to relate to this. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll celebrate 38 years, March 23rd. It's coming up, And I have been alcohol and drug free all of those years. And you know what? I would never think of having one drink. Never. I would never think of having one joint, one pill, right? But isn't it funny that I thought about having cigarettes, though? Isn't that funny? And I figured out why. And this is why. When I was drinking, I got arrested for drunk driving. I would, drink and smoke a whole lot of dope, and then I'd go to the bar, and then I'd get into a bar fight. Well, then I'd get arrested because I was in a bar fight, right? All of the stuff that happened when I was drinking and drugging, I could see happening. It had consequences that I could see, that I could touch. Being arrested, being put in the back of a cruiser, go figure, Nicotine is so deadly that I couldn't see the consequences and never really fully understood how dangerous it was till I was standing in my bathroom looking at my own blood all over the bathroom mirror and the sink. This disease, I think, in my opinion, for this human being, is worse to give up than my alcohol and drugs were, right? This disease is a better liar. And this disease had me captive for many years because I was at dis-ease with myself. And I was in denial. And all of my character defects, really, when you think about it, they were all there. And while I'm using nicotine, they were still coming out, right? I know today that for the last 3 months and 2 weeks and 5 days, I believe it is, I have not coughed. I have not coughed up blood. I got a Fitbit and I set a goal for 10,000 steps. And the day before yesterday, I took my Rottweiler for a walk and we did 10,000 steps. Last weekend, I took my Rottweiler through the woods and we went along the trails in the woods. We climbed over trees. We did all sorts of stuff. I did not run out of breath. I can laugh without breaking out into a cough. I can cry without choking. I can take deep breaths today without my lungs hurting me. I can walk up and down stairs today without losing my breath. I can do a full didactic lecture at work, which takes about an hour, or actually it's a 90-minute group that I do, a trauma group. Or I do several trauma groups, actually. They're all 90 minutes long. And I can talk through all of them without losing my breath and without choking. Why is that? It's because this time when I came back to you people a lot more humbled than I was before. I came back to you people ready to admit that, you know what? I am powerless over this addiction, and my life had become unmanageable. I was ready to admit the insanity of this addiction, continuing to smoke with bronchitis, the beginning stages of emphysema, continuing to smoke when your little grandson goes into the hospital because you chose to smoke beside him, right? Continuing to smoke at work when they're telling you can't, right? Continuing to smoke despite everything that told me I shouldn't be, right? Now I am coming to meetings. I am more humbled, I think, by this disease than I ever was before. I fully understand and fully accept the first step. I have been in the practice of asking my higher power for help to stay nicotine free, thanking my higher power at night for having me kept me nicotine free, listening to you people when you share at these meetings because you all inspire me, being grateful for every day that I have, being grateful that I'm not coughing anymore, being grateful for the workbook that we have to work out of. Right now, I've just started on step 3 in that book. And you know what? I tried to apply the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to my smoking. It didn't work. You want to know why it didn't work? Because I wasn't addressing the issue of nicotine. That's why. I needed Nicotine Anonymous to deal with nicotine. I needed other nicotine addicts who understood how powerful this addiction was as well, and that in some ways it may be more powerful than my alcoholism and my drug addiction, because it's real interesting that I was very successful at dealing with those, and I did not have never relapsed, right? But isn't it kind of funny that I held on to this one so long? It's because this one was more powerful for me and more deadly, and it terrified me to give it up. Today I know that I can deal with sad things without having a cigarette. Another good friend of mine died of cancer. She was only 47 years old. I did not have to smoke. When I got my divorce papers, I divorced my husband after I found out what he had done. My granddaughter went to court and testified for a preliminary trial. I could go with her. I could be with her. And I did not have to smoke. I was able to be a support to her. Fortunately, I did not see him. He was in the courtroom, and we were kept in a separate room, but I knew he was there. And I didn't have to smoke. And when my daughter left the courtroom, immediately lit up a cigarette, and my granddaughter lit up a cigarette, I did not have to smoke. Because I know today that a cigarette is not going to change anything that goes on around me. In fact, it's only going to allow me not to deal with what's going on around me. And I was very proud of the fact that I did not have to smoke when we walked out of that courtroom. But the only reason I did not is because I had asked for help that morning. I've been coming to these meetings. I've been listening to you people. I've been trying to live these steps. I've been able to see the insanity of this nicotine addiction, doing the same thing over and over and over and thinking it was going to be different. I was able to see that even though I had quit, when I returned to using, it did get worse, a lot worse. I don't want to die choking on my own blood. I don't want to die gasping for breath. I've seen that when I spent 8 years hospice nursing. I watched people die. I saw death from smoking. It's not pretty. And I don't want to die that way. I know today that I am grateful to my higher power for being nicotine free for a little over 3 months. I'm grateful for these steps. I'm grateful for you people. I'm grateful that I'm able to do this only one day at a time, because that's all. I heard at a meeting this morning, it was really neat. I went to the meeting at 8:30 this morning, and I heard the best way today is live today like there's no tomorrow. Isn't that cool, right? I love that. I'm going to steal that, and I'm going to use it with my clients. But anyway, I've done a little meeting, little pop-up meeting. And what I'm going to do this time is I'm going to maybe assist in co-chairing or do a little pop-up meeting now and again, but I am not going to take on any meetings until I know that my ego will remain in check and it won't get blown out of proportion again. Anyway, I thought that Kenny might need a speaker tonight, and I thought, you know what, I'm really grateful today. I wanted you people to know that there is hope. If there's anyone new here, there is hope. I wanted anyone new here to understand that if you get cocky with your time free of nicotine, you may very well return to using nicotine. And I wanted the new person to know that, you know what, there is nothing that's going to happen to you today that you and your higher power and your sponsor here in Nicotine Anonymous can't handle together. There may be a million reasons to smoke and use nicotine again, but there's not one excuse. And as long, or not one good reason. There's a lot of excuses, but not one good reason. And as long as we continue to come to these meetings, we continue to keep in touch with our sponsor, we continue to remain humble, asking for help, thanking our higher power at night, we continue to support, love, care for, and listen to each other, do service work if we can in these meetings, and be grateful for each and every voice that we hear in these VONAR meetings every day, then we can stay nicotine-free one day at a time. I once did not have any hope, and thanks to you people, I have found my hope again, and this time I'm not letting go of you, no matter what. So anyway, thank you for allowing me to share, and thank you for your patience. Go ahead, and God bless y'all.